Tamaris, we work with the film industry, creating outreach resources associated with films, and I always have to say that isn't Christian films, it's secular films. We work with Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, Disney, all of the main film distributors, creating Christian outreach resources for the church to be able to invite their community around them, to engage with them in films, and to help people then on their spiritual journey. We produce a number of different resources. Movie Moments we looked at yesterday. Pollard on Film we'll look at today. For some reason, Culture Watch isn't on that slide, which Tony heads up. But Pollard on Film we'll look at particularly. But I tell you what we want to do. This is a forum. ELF is a forum. And forum means not just people talking from the front, and not just people giving resources out, but it's also people sharing together and building resources together. And so what I want to invite you to do is to join with me in this session, thinking about together how Pollard on Film could look in the next stage of the development of Damaris. I'll explain a little bit more to you about that a little bit later, but basically to say, up to now we've been working with the film industry, creating resources for for churches to reach their community, but increasingly we are now working with the film industry to create resources for other community groups to put on things for their community. So that might be Rotary or Scouts and Guides or Women's Institute or something like that. Now, of course, that has to be very different, because in the church resources, one can talk about explaining the gospel to people, helping people to understand the gospel. But in those resources, we need to produce resources that, with complete integrity, a non-Christian leader can lead with a non-Christian group in a non-Christian organization. But it will help everybody to explore and think and question. And so that's where we're kind of looking at. Now, to help you with that, just while I'm talking, two recent films that we did resources for. One was The Iron Lady, Meryl Streep film, and that one was created for Christian organizations, and primarily created for the Mothers Union, for them to use to invite people to go and see the film and engage with it. Then what marks the change between that and the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel is the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel was produced primarily for people in University of the Third Age, which is a kind of a thing, an informal grouping in Britain for, and probably in other areas as well, for people, active retired people, who want to learn together for fun. And I'll pass these around. You needn't look at the DVDs because you won't be able to see what's in them. But just pass these around, and you might notice as we're doing this, kind of a difference between them would be interesting. So if you want to have a look, one, and pass them around, if they could just kind of circulate around and end up at the front, that would be great. Thank you. Okay. Now, the need is still the same, working with Christians, helping them to help non-Christians to think about philosophical questions, to think rigorously, clearly about big questions. And by the way, philosophy comes from the Greek word philos, sophos, love of wisdom, and it really means thinking clearly about big questions. And everybody does it in one way or another. The need is still the same. The question is, how are we going to help them to do it? Come, let us reason together is something that resonates actually with all of us. We want to reason. We want to think. We don't want to just have ideas thrust at us. We want to engage together. I'm going to show you a clip from a BBC Mitchell and Webb show where there is a discussion about whether God exists. And what I want you to do is to look at this clip and then think with me afterwards, or feedback to me afterwards, why is it we find it funny? What is it about this that we find funny?
Good evening and welcome to Big Talk. My name's Raymond Terrific, and yet again I stand at the eye of the storm of the world's ills, waving my staff like Gandalf and screaming, let's get this sorted! As ever, I'm joined by a panel of brain spurts and mentalissimos, a veritable smorgasbord of cleverness that the world is rightly too respectful to eat. First up, it's a biggie, but I refuse to be scared. Is there a god? Leonard?
Well, this is an age-old question.
Answer can't be as long as the question, Leonard. Do not show you're working.
Well, of course, it's...
Yes or no?
Yes.
Great, he shoots, he scores. Right, moving on. Dex, what are we going to do about...
Hang on, there isn't a God.
But he said there was.
Yes, but that was just...
Leonard, did you or did you not just say there was a God?
I did.
So has Danielle got new information, or were you playing me like a balalaika?
Come on, Boffins,
I've already wasted time saying balalaika when drum would do. Let's get this sorted.
I think the problem we're having here is that Leonard thinks there is a God, and I think there isn't.
Oh, you are having a go!
No, it's just that we respectfully disagree.
That is bad news. Can we sort it? Richard, get into this. Casting vote.
Well, I'm agnostic, and so is Tim.
Yes.
Oh, make the tea! Guys, Boffins, we need to know if there's a God. It's important.
Well, there is no yes or no answer.
What? I can think of two yes or no answers just off the top of my head.
Why is it funny? What's going on there that makes us laugh?
The whole thing.
It's the caricature. In what way is it caricatured, though? Well, how is it? Yeah.
Just making fun of particular personalities rather than views.
Okay.
It takes a mix of a typical talk show, because in a talk show they talk for ages, and then it could be a different matter, but then the funny thing is that in TV talk shows go forever, you know.
Seeing these two things, at least for a philosopher, is breaking a lot of rules during the debate, and this guy that's leading the talk show, he looks very similar to Nietzsche.
Right. Okay, well, yep, yeah.
See, also the contrast between his kind of behavior and these other people that are trying to
do it. Yeah, okay. Now, what can we learn from that is good or bad about talking together about big philosophical questions? First of all, what's good about what happens there?
Getting to the point,
yeah.
He's not ready to listen.
He's not ready to listen. You say that was good or bad?
Bad.
Okay. Now hold that one just a sec. As the Rogerian psychotherapist would say, hold that thought. But just hold that for a second and just think, what's good? Is there anything good about that? Yeah.
I don't understand the question. But
well, anything good about the way in which they're engaging together and talking about this philosophical question about whether God exists? Was there anything that anyone said there that you thought, oh yeah, he's right. He's right with that.
They tried to behave
serious. Yeah, they were taking it seriously. Do you notice at one point that he, the chairman in the middle, said, we need to know whether there's a God, it's important. Yeah? So I think we'd say, yeah, it's important to know, but then how do they go about it? What would you say was bad about the way they go about it? You were saying...
He won't listen.
Yeah. Yeah, he won't listen. Other things we could characterise about it? See, yeah?
He didn't give space for reasoning.
No space for reasoning. He just wanted a yes or no answer. He just needed it straight away. Other thoughts about it? Yeah.
Actually, I have a good thing that I was forgot to mention. I think when the agnost came, that was brilliant because actually it stopped.
Yeah.
It stopped in a way. That was good. But now go on with the bad.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Because of the agnosticism among the two people, it kind of halted proceedings in the way that I don't know how it would have developed, but they don't know. And someone said, wasn't the chairman, that actually we can't possibly know, or something like that.
No, he said that. He said, I don't know, and we can't possibly know. Yeah, that's right. So there's soft agnosticism and hard agnosticism rolled into one sentence. There was a, right at the very beginning, when he went to him and said, tell us, is there a God? And he started talking. What did he say in reply? He said, answer can't be as long as the question, do not show you're working. Is that a good way to engage in discussion about deep questions? No, we need to show our working. We need to take it seriously, but we do need to show our working. We do need to use reason and argument. We do need to listen to people. We do need to take time. We do need to give space. We do need to recognize that different people have different opinions, and we need to respect the people who hold the different opinions. But we need to say, if this opinion contradicts this opinion, then they cannot both be right. Aristotle's principle of non-contradiction still applies today. And so a whole lot of rules of engaging together philosophically are broken in that. And that's part of why we find it's funny. part of why we find it funny, because it's all the rules are broken about how we should engage. So in Pollard on Film, what I'm trying to do is to set up and encourage discussion in groups. And Pollard on Film is geared for someone using in a group, and we'll do it together a couple of times today. And I'm trying to help to stimulate good discussion. So, you know, that's been the, as Carol was yesterday looking at Eat, Pray, Love, and that line there, if you can't be a good example, you will be a dreadful warning. Perhaps as a dreadful warning, I hope we can come to some good example together. Rob Lacey, the great actor, writer, was part of my team for many years. We did loads of university and college missions together. And I miss him deeply every time I see his picture. And he said this, good art makes you feel so much you can't help but think. Now, I actually don't know whether he made that up or is he quoting someone else. If someone tells me, oh, actually, it was someone else he's quoting, but I keep saying it was him who said it. So we all carry on with that wonderful thought. Rob died of cancer a few years ago. So good art makes you feel so much you can't help but think. Films are good art that make you feel so much you can't help but think. And so we work with the film industry creating resources to help people to think around the films that are produced. As I said earlier, I'll now show it to you with pictures. So we've done the kind of textual learning and now the visual learning on it. That actually we're working currently on a number of different films for Damaris to create resources. Oh, this has got one of these great laser things, hasn't it? There we go. Look at that. How good's that? Now, if anyone misbehaves, I'll take your eye out. All right? Okay. Right. So, Damaris working, creating resources for the church to use to reach people in their community and around their community. That sounds fantastic, doesn't it? Until you realize... So, lots of different resources. Until you realize that there are a whole load more people that the church never reaches. So, how are we going to reach all of those people that the church never reaches? Well, then we realized, of course, there are lots of other community groups, Rotary, Scout, Women's Institute, University of the Third Age, and they have members from those different people in the world are part of that community. So we want to be inclusive. Everybody's on a spiritual journey, and we want to help people on that spiritual journey. We don't want people to be excluded from that and excluded from the opportunity that's available in films. So that's why we're now looking at how we can create resources around many more films that we can then create resources specifically for different community groups. And how then would Pollard on Film look in that particular way? Well, Movie Moments works very well for that. Those of you who were here yesterday, you would see it works very well for a non-Christian leader of a non-Christian group in a non-Christian organization to actually think about life issues. And I don't think anyone would feel that their integrity was being spoiled by all of the ones you saw. You're nodding. I mean, that's the thing. They're great for that. But what about Pollard on Film? Well, let me first of all show you Pollard on Film. Now, I think Pollard on Film will still have its place as it is amongst churches using it and Christian groups and Christian unions. So our back catalogue still is valuable, and we probably will still carry on producing things like this for the church in future. But what could we learn from it and apply into the community groups for the future? That's the question. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you three Pollard on Films. Or should they be Pollards on Film? I don't know. But anyway, we'll show you three of those. Race to Witch Mountain, Creation, and Hancock. Three very different films. And through those, we're going to explore philosophical ideas related to truth, knowledge, and meaning. And I'm going to introduce you through those to a number of different philosophers. Who are those? Anyone recognize any philosophers? There? Socrates. Sorry? Not Socrates. If we go from that end, that's right. No, we can start with the hard one if you like. That's not Socrates. No. They all look the same, don't they? It's Pyro of Elis. Pyro of Elis. You'll come across. We'll explain Pyro of Elis in just a minute. That one? David Hume. Yeah. Oh, the three empiricists, Locke, Berkeley, and Hume. That one is David Hume. Nietzsche. Jean-Paul Sartre, yeah, said wonderfully with a French accent. It's the only way to say it, isn't it? So we help introduce people to ideas and introduce people to philosophers, so it's not me saying, oh, this is what I think, but let's introduce you to different thoughts that different people have. And of course, what we're trying to do is get them to a point of actually thinking, actually, it's interesting to look at the Bible in that context as well. And that actually is the place we're heading to on each Pollard on Film. So let's start of all, first of all, with Race to Witch Mountain. Now what I've done is I've divided these up into bits. It actually is one long piece, which is about 6 or 7 minutes long, but I've divided it up into bits, and I will stop between them and we'll discuss a little bit about it. But let's start with Race to Witch Mountain. The first bit, which is introducing the movie. Race to Witch Mountain is a remake of the 1975 film Escape to Witch Mountain. And the change of title from Escape to Race is significant because the producers really have made this a fast-paced, exciting film full of dramatic chase sequences.
Are you doing this?
There's no way.
In those chase scenes, we see the teenagers, Sarah and Seth, demonstrating their powers and evoking different reactions from the adults around them.
Whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
That was Jack Bruno, a Las Vegas taxi driver who gets caught up in their life and gradually changes his opinion about them. There are others who know about these alien teenagers and want to find them. One of those is Henry Burke from Military Intelligence, who saw their spacecraft land.
Object of unknown origin descending fast.
Extend the perimeter. No one gets in. Nothing gets out.
Awesome.
Burke wants them captured so that they can be dissected and studied, even if it means killing them. So Sarah and Seth run and come to Las Vegas, where they get into the back of Jack Bruno's taxi. Right from the beginning, he knows they're on.
Where to?
We must travel in that direction.
Latitude 40.5.
We're just going to stick with that direction.
When they tell him they're from another planet, he doesn't believe them, and he turns it into a joke.
We're not from your planet.
Well, you don't look like aliens.
What does an alien look like?
You know what aliens look like? They're like little green people with antennas that take me to your leader, Earthlings. Ooh.
Earlier in the film, we saw this attitude when he spoke to another character, a scientist called Dr. Alex Friedman. He dropped her off at a convention where she was to deliver a scientific lecture to some rather strange UFO enthusiasts. This is a fascinating scene that clearly portrays three different ways of thinking.
Welcome to the nut job convention.
I understand your reaction. They certainly aren't helping our cause.
Our cause?
Educating the public on the legitimate possibility of life on other planets.
As a matter of fact, I'm giving a lecture on astrophysical anomaly detection at the nut job convention. Feel free to stop by. Closed-minded skeptics are always welcome.
Okay, stopping it there. Closed-minded skeptics are always welcome. Now, what I do from that point, that's kind of explaining the film, telling the story of the film, particularly for people who don't know it before. And now what I'm going to do in the next bit of it is actually introduce some philosophical questions. So here we have three different ways of thinking. There's a convention full of people who believe in UFOs, and as we see later in the film, they'll believe in anything as long as it's exciting and dramatic. They're clearly very gullible. Then there's the scientist who's sceptical. She's focused on reasoned analysis of facts to form a conclusion, but she is open to the possibility of life beyond this Earth. And finally, there's Jack Bruno, whom she calls a closed-minded sceptic. Indeed, many would say that he's simply cynical. So there are three different ways of thinking: being gullible, sceptical, or cynical. They're revealed here in relation to aliens, but they also apply to thinking about any big question. Now, most of us would agree that we don't want to be gullible or cynical. We want to have a healthy scepticism. But what makes a good, healthy scepticism, as opposed to being gullible or cynical? That's the midpoint of the Pollard on Film, and at that point, people would stop it and discuss together. That's the idea that, you know, we're in a group and we're going to discuss together. What makes a good, healthy scepticism different from being gullible or cynical? I tell you what, let's just do it for a minute, shall we? What does make a good, healthy scepticism different from being gullible or cynical? How would you answer that question?
It allows you to consider both points of view.
Say again?
It allows you to
You're considering both points of view. If you're being sceptical, you're considering both points of view. How are you not doing that if you're being gullible or cynical? How do they not? Yeah.
By not doing so.
Not doing so. Okay, yeah.
But if you're being cynical, you've got strong presuppositions about things, whereas if you're a sceptic, you would be more open. Gullibility is something else, you don't believe anything. But
yeah.
I think the problem with cynicism is that it holds a lot of presuppositional ideas.
Yeah. What sort of presuppositional ideas are in
cynicism? There's no life outside.
That there is no answer. Yeah, in this particular question it's about life outside, but in any question there is no answer. So being gullible is about just accepting anything. Being cynical is there are no answers. So what is a good healthy skepticism? Yeah.
I'm not sure if you can give any objective definition of good healthy skepticism. Because there are different types of skepticism,
yep.
And everyone will say their skepticism is good and healthy. So it is a bit wide.
Yes, that's right. So well, you're a head of philosophy department, so you know the different types of skepticism, which we'll come across in just a minute. But I would just unpacking that just a little bit on a simple level. Skepticism, I think a way of thinking of it in simple terms is that skepticism is a methodology. Cynicism is a destination. Cynicism is saying there are no answers. Skepticism is saying I'm looking for answers. Or, depending upon your type of skepticism, you might actually say there are no answers, as you'll see in a minute, and I should just let it play rather than trying to explain it, because the script is probably better. Here we go. Philosophers have identified different types of skepticism. Some talk about total negative skepticism, a form of nihilism which completely rejects any claims to truth or value. Then there's what's sometimes called neutral skepticism or Pyrrhonism, named after Pyrrho of Elis, who lived in the 3rd century BC. This holds that we can never be sure of any truth, so we shouldn't make any judgments or express any definite conclusions. Then there's what David Hume, the 18th century Scottish philosopher, called mitigated scepticism, which argues that there are no ultimate truths or certainties, but life forces us to make choices, so we have to live as if there are truths. And then there is a methodological scepticism, which is a way of seeking answers by asking questions and looking at evidence. This is what Jack Bruno actually adopts as the film progresses. He moves from his cynicism to a methodological scepticism as he becomes convinced by the evidence.
Stay down! Stay down!
Look out!
So one might then be able to discuss together about the difference between methodological scepticism, particularly advanced by Paul Kurtz and others, and the contrast between that and the total negative scepticism that says there are no answers, the mitigated scepticism that says we have to live as if there are answers, and the neutral scepticism or Pyrrhonism that says we need to suspend judgment. And there's a lot one could talk about together if one has time with people engaging with that. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, engaging with it in that way, then what I want to do is help people to see if one accepts a methodological scepticism and one is wanting to look for answers by asking questions, is there a way then that we might then encourage them in that process to be open to looking at Scripture, open to looking at the Bible?
It's stunts like that which convince him, and so he takes Sarah and Seth back to Vegas to meet Alex, the scientist.
You're telling me you think those two kids were extraterrestrials searching for their missing spaceship?
Oh, they can also do all this stuff, too.
Now, of course, this is a film, and the evidence that is supplied here is fictional. As I understand it, in the real world, there is no convincing evidence for UFOs or life on other planets. But I think there is convincing evidence for a spiritual reality beyond this world. I think there's good evidence that God exists. And perhaps a place to look for that is in the miracles of Jesus. John's Gospel records that Jesus performed many signs, and these are written that you may believe. So there's an invitation to apply the same methodological scepticism to the evidence for Jesus and to come to your own conclusion about who he is. Of course, if you become a believer in Jesus, then, like me, you will still continue your healthy scepticism as you keep thinking about big questions throughout your life. As indeed Jack Bruno did. Even when he believed Sarah and Seth's story, he still kept asking questions about them.
You know how to fly this thing, right?
I think we got you.
You crashed, remember?
So, thank you, Disney, for that. So, let's just take a moment. Then you can see that actually that last bit then of encouraging people to then look at the Bible and apply the same methodological scepticism to the evidence for Jesus. You can see how that works very well in a Christian group. You know, because in a Christian-run group, okay, we're going to take the film seriously, we're going to do some serious philosophy, and we're going to then have a platform to actually then start looking at the Bible. And a typical Christian Union outreach meeting in a university, it works perfectly for that. Think with me, would you, though, about what one could do differently if one's wanting to do that same kind of task, but in a group which is a secular group run by a non-Christian with a bunch of non-Christians. How might that be different? What, any thoughts? Yeah.
At least take the Bible.
Yeah.
Learn it as one thing. And now you immediately start with, let's take the Bible and Jesus. Maybe you can take other art, the pyramids or something else.
Yeah.
And then... But
for
now, let's pick Jesus.
So,
then you give more options,
yeah.
Also from a non-religious, immediately Protestant.
Like we have done in our Marigold resources, where we've got a whole range of different religious perspectives on that. Now, you've said two things. Sorry, what's your first name?
The Bibles.
No, what's your first name? No, your name.
First name is Christina.
Christina, you've said two things there, which are, let's unpack those a little bit together. Thanks, Christina, for getting us going, because I think, you know, we can sort of think about this together. But you said two things which are actually contradictory. One is to say, not necessarily contradictory. One is to say, get rid of the Bible. So that's one option one could do. Yes, okay, yeah. Oh, no, that's mine here on this PowerPoint. Let's say, what you see is that. You don't see this. This is just, sorry. This is just for me telling you this bit of Pollard on film is this. Ignore that bit altogether. Yeah, okay. So we could, but one thought we have had is, well, let's just not do the Bible bit at the end. That's one possibility that I thought you were saying, which is just to say, okay, let's do the philosophy and then leave it at that question. How do we then, let's invite us to be methodological skeptics. Let's invite people to think and question. One could do that. Alternatively, one could add on a bunch of different things, different ideas, different perspectives. Let's unpack those a little bit. So let's take the second one first. Imagine you're doing this right the way through. You've done the stuff on the film, you've done the stuff on the philosophy, now there's a whole range of different religious perspectives. How do you feel about that?
Well, I just think that if you leave it completely open, then if the group has very little knowledge of any religion, never mind Christianity, then even their starting point could be completely wrong. But then I think it's almost like you need to give some objective facts about the different religions that you are inviting them to engage with. You can do it objectively, objective viewpoints of these different religions, and say, you know, discuss from if they say this, then how does that affect.
So what you're saying is, if we take the two possibilities, one is to stop it after the philosophy, the other is to go on after the philosophy, but instead of just doing Bible, we do a range of different perspectives, right?
Yeah.
And you're saying if we stop it, it's just too, they haven't got enough to really engage with. Is that right? But if we do the rest of it, Christina, you're... Oh, no, sorry. Yeah.
I think personally, I'm
it's much more stuff than we do this kind of thing without film usually. And it seems to me that you do need someone who knows what they're doing within the group. So if you just left it to a totally unchurched group of people, then that might not work. It might work eventually, but so you need someone with a bit of strategy to be able to know what to introduce. So rather than even, I mean, if you start bringing in Hinduism and Buddhism and all the other philosophies of religion, then you're going to get really into deep water, I think, initially.
Yeah.
I think it is very much dependent on what kind of group it is. If it is announced as a group, as a dialogue between Christians and non-Christians, I think the Bible could be the only option.
Right. Yeah.
But
this wouldn't be announced as a Christians and non-Christians. This would be a thing being used by a non-Christian group to engage. We want to think philosophically about this film.
The Bible, then.
Well, do we or don't we? That's the question.
I think, like, if you go to any film discussion, any film group discussion, they're not coming to a conclusion at the end necessarily. Everyone's just talking about the film, having a discussion. If you were in a book club, it would be the same. And everyone just goes away and chooses another film or chooses another book. And it's just there for opening up discussion. So it depends if you want it to be more than that. Because if it's just that, then you've just got the question, the philosophical questions, and you just leave it.
Yeah.
And of course that's riskier because it's out of your hands. But except you've produced a good resource, and it's almost like the resource is Christians produce a good resource that would be respected by other people.
Like art that's produced by an artist who is a Christian, but it's not got John 3:16 in the bottom corner. Yeah, Christina.
Yeah. What counts as evidence. So you can take, like, the materialistic, we have archaeological findings, we have a phenomenological approach, which gives priority to these experiences, and also maybe you can take a historical point of view. So there's different types of evidence you can lay out if you want to broaden the scope of doing philosophy in the movies. Like, what kind of evidence are being brought to the table? Only the facts.
That, for me, the worry with that is that it's already quite hard. I mean, for non-philosophers here, most people who are non-philosophers, how did you cope with the four different types of scepticism? You know, the total negative scepticism and mitigated scepticism and Pyrrhonism and methodological scepticism. Is it already like, oh my goodness, this is too much already? Or is it just on the edge? Yeah. And the fear is if we then add more philosophy in, That's what do you think?
Yeah.
To use the big philosophical words, word phenomenology or epistemology or whatever. Yes. There are different ways of knowing, and that is one is through hard facts.
Yeah.
Bring that back to the film as well, maybe looking at characters, like the guy saw physical evidence, he saw it, so.
Yeah,
bring it back.
Yeah. Which will give people more time to explore the philosophy.
But
yeah.
I think, like, sometimes an artist can't piece of work, is this meant to do everything?
Yes. Yeah. Very good question. What is it we're trying to do here? And thinking in terms of it missiologically, what is it we're trying to do? Is it with Carol's movie moments, it's very obvious. It's trying to get people thinking about life issues and just raising questions. So are we just wanting to get people to think philosophically?
Well, clearly. In this particular film, I think, especially with the aliens and evolution, there are a lot of people I know, quite a few atheists, who believe in the possibility of life evolving somewhere else.
Yes.
Therefore, there might well be aliens.
Yeah.
So that kind of that's a limited kind of horizon.
Right.
Developing the debate or whatever. Depends how you're going to proceed with this.
Yeah.
In this group.
That's very helpful. Let me say last one.
Yeah, I just have an idea that just like with Christians doing artwork, there might be some pieces of art that lend themselves better to spiritual discussion than others. And therefore, you don't need a one-size-fits-all thing. So when some films where it's really obviously necessary to discuss the spiritual, hey presto, there you have a natural way of approaching or coming in into that kind of discussion, while other films you don't need to touch it because it's not really relevant to that film.
Right, so letting it come out naturally,
yeah.
But the rest, so the spiritual element comes out naturally sometimes, mm-hmm. but not in others, and not to feel worried about. We do some films that don't have any Pollard on film that don't have any spiritual engagement because it's not appropriate to that film. Let me stop it now, and I'm going to show you a second one. Now, what I wanted to do was, we're discussing together with those thoughts in mind, and we're trying to think how we could reshape this. Let's watch a second one. This is from Creation. The story of Charles Darwin and his Christian wife. So first of all, the bits of movie. You remember, this is just for you, you're not seeing this.
The story of Charles Darwin as he struggles to write and publish On the Origin of Species. This is not the Darwin with whom most people are familiar, old, bearded and austere. Here we see him as a young married man with a family. His relationship with his wife, Emma, is central to the film because she's a devout Christian and he knows that his theory will be used to challenge her faith. However, Darwin doesn't hold back from sharing his ideas with his family.
You sit back and look at the rock. You look at it, really look at it. You can take this mountain through time. See these grayish, muddy layers? They were brought here by quiet, patient, gentle rivers. Whereas these dramatic, sandstone deposits are telling us of huge storms. Storms that came from here millions of years ago, and Aunt Sarah was 50 years ago, and down there was a swamp, all dinosaurs.
Through his careful, rigorous study of nature, Darwin becomes increasingly aware of suffering in the world. His theory of evolution by natural selection was dependent on the death of those less fitted for survival. It seemed that suffering was built into the natural world. Darwin's experience of death is not limited to his field studies. It comes into his own family as he watches his beloved daughter Annie die. Historians record that Annie's death had a profound impact on Darwin. There is some significant dispute over whether it was Annie's death or his biological studies that led him away from a belief in God. And here I think the film is very useful, because it helps us to think about the two together. We see Darwin struggling to come to terms with Annie's death, at the same time that he's struggling to come to terms with the implications of his theory. Paul Bettany, who plays Darwin, puts it this way.
He and his wife were distraught about that, and he was, in some respects, about to rob the one Darwin that his wife had for that pain.
Whatever the cause of Darwin's changing belief about God in the film, he's obviously very aware of the impact his book might have upon others.
It changes everything. Suppose the whole world stopped believing that God had any sort of plan for us, apart from anything else, it would break your mother's heart.
So we watch his struggle as both he and Emma wrestle with the consequences of his research.
I'm sorry, I dare not study for the human scene more clearly what is already his pain's day. Not being much torture in life.
I think you're at the wall with God's chance. Should those nerves have baffled you, cannot.
Okay, stopping it there, that part of it. Remember, what you get with Pollard on film is continuous. I'm just stopping it to just show that bit then. Kind of unpacking the movie, introducing the movie. Now we move into looking at some of the philosophy and question.
And so this excellent film raises two crucial questions for all of us. Think for a moment about a belief that you have, some view that you hold firmly and deeply. Why is it that you believe it? And what would it take to make you change your mind?
So people would stop and discuss that in their groups.
Let's look at some principles behind those two questions. First, the reasons why people hold a belief. Recent research has shown that most people hold beliefs for one or more of four reasons. First, there are sociological reasons, because my family or culture believes it. Second, there are psychological reasons, because the belief gives me meaning or purpose. Third, there are deferential reasons, because I was told by my teacher or I read it in a book. And finally, there are rational reasons, because the belief is based on the best available evidence, it's soundly argued, and it stands up to the strongest objections. So, moving on to the second question, what might make it reasonable for someone to change their mind? Most philosophers accept that it's unreasonable to change your mind for sociological or psychological reasons. It might be reasonable to change your mind for deferential reasons, provided you had a good justification for accepting the source of authority, such as if God himself said it. But how do we know that the authority is trustworthy? That depends upon the best available evidence, sound arguments, and standing up to the strongest objections, which is exactly the criteria of the rational basis for belief in the first place.
Okay, does that make sense? Four reasons people believe things, and they already collapse down into rational about evidence and argument. Okay, let's move on from that to the section that leads to Bible.
How do we know that the authority is trustworthy? That depends upon the best available evidence, sound arguments, and standing up for the strongest objections, which is exactly the criteria of the rational basis for belief in the first place. So what did Darwin do? Why did he increasingly turn his back on God? Certainly he was meticulous at carefully investigating biological evidence. But did he move away from a belief in God purely for rational reasons? It seems that he was influenced by some of the people around him. So were there sociological reasons for his change? And he clearly was affected by the death of his daughter. So were there psychological factors at work? Whatever led to Darwin's loss of faith, the fact is that all of us must think carefully about why we believe what we do and what is a reasonable basis for changing our minds. Interestingly, the Bible itself, far from endorsing any blind faith, calls us to test everything and hold on to the good.
Okay. Looking at that, When my mum saw it, she said, "You do look ill." I had raging flu when I filmed that. Absolutely radio, huge high temperature. In building on what we were saying before, how might one change the end of that? Or restructure the whole thing to do the same thing? What, any thoughts on that?
I think the last point of letting the film sort of decide what we discuss, and that lends itself to really look at evidence, what does God think of creation, you know?
Yeah.
So that lends up perfectly, you know?
Yeah.
So you can go into detail and actually use the Bible. What is the wife's view? And we can look at the Bible, and what's his view? Maybe look at stuff, and you can have a really good debate. Sort of
But do we build that into it? Or
I think it's really natural because that's the whole.
Yeah, what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about the relationship between. I haven't seen the film, unfortunately, so I'm not able to call. But I believe it's the relationship between him and his wife.
Yeah, him and his Christian wife, and how.
So it is naturally. Put the Bible there.
If the group were some church people, that would probably fuel their presuppositions about evolutionary theory, and certainly with regards to suffering, which is my subject that I'm touching at the moment. But and even if you had Christians in the group, they would have to be pretty skilled, because if you had someone who was holding quite strict, this is not a pretty young earth creationism idea of how things happen, it could be a recipe for disaster. All these things, you've just got to have someone who's skilled. To me, it just shows you need someone in this group who is a Christian and skillfully, a missional operator who can skillfully
do that. So perhaps part of our whole strategy in doing this with the different community groups is that we have to make sure the resources are ones that are open-ended, but we have to also be encouraging Christians to be engaging in those community groups themselves. I actually, yes, yeah.
I
I just wanted to say that, just like, you know, what's his name, Nicky Gumbel.
Right. Alpha.
Stuff.
Yeah.
He definitely, he leaves a lot to be discussed, but he gives quite helpful questions or thoughts.
Right.
It's almost like you're the one that might have to be extremely skilled in how you
Across
an argument, or not even putting across an argument, but putting out, I suppose, the viewpoints that are there.
It's yeah.
The way that if a Christian is in the group and has a viewpoint that other people don't have, but what you say through your presentation will somehow save them from tying a noose around their neck.
So I got to do stuff that teaches the film, explains the film, teaches the philosophy, gives questions, and also shows the Christian how to shut up and not be so stupid.
I'm not sure. You just almost, maybe say, regardless of what you've discussed, there are very different viewpoints, and there are strong kind of academics that have these various viewpoints, both the creationist and the is it Darwinist view? You can say that. That's not you having to go into much detail, but just to put across the point, there are clever people
who
have both viewpoints,
Well, actually, in the package of resources that we put around that, we had a video of three academic scientists, a young earth creationist, a theist evolutionist, and an atheist, debating together. And the interesting thing is, the film company loved our video, loved Pollard on Film and those videos so much, they put them on the official DVD. So if you buy the official DVD, it's on there, which is great. And, that, what you've just seen is on there. And look up on the internet for reviews of atheists about that Pollard on Film on this DVD. Yeah, that's quite interesting. That is quite interesting. So, so one last one. Yeah.
The problem with evil is very strongly present. So I think that can make people go into very hard feelings.
See, it's the kind of thing, I mean, exactly, there's so many things one could do, and it's a question, can one in a 7-minute video produce something which is true to the film and actually opens up some philosophical debate and gives people enough information for people who may know none of the philosophical terms, never done any philosophy, and enable them to then discuss? Or is it that actually we just scrap trying to do this because it's too difficult? Yeah.
As far as I can see, I don't know how you want to market this or where you want to market it, particularly, whether it's out for public consumption. But it seems to me that our church in Bournemouth, we're a mission church. We've got a lot of missionary groups. We've had a lot of fire, probably 80 people, 60 of them are not Christian.
Right.
So if you were to get this out to places like Bournemouth Minster Church or other places that are doing missional stuff, where they can use this stuff very strategically, I reckon it'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Well, it's all there. It's all on that. We're advertising it, and it's free, you see. You can just download that and use that, you see. Yeah. Yeah. But what we want to do is move from it being used just by Christians to it being used in community groups.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it's the Christians who are organizing it. Yes. The Christian leads it and runs it. Yeah, so but we want to make it...
How are you going to market it, and how are you going to describe the product?
To the non-Christian groups?
Yeah.
Well, to the Marigold resources there that you've got, we described as resources that for University of the Third Age to engage with questions. And I think it was 2,000 of them were taken by University of the Third Age groups right across the country. So we've got loads and loads of people using it. And they loved it. They absolutely lapped it up. And this is a non-Christian organization with non-Christian leaders doing it with non-Christian people, but feeling they can use it with integrity. But that was two movie moments. It wasn't the Pollard on Film. There was one final one. You're going to say?
It goes back to the question of what your intention is with it, because as you're saying, because you're kind of saying you need an expert to be doing this, but if your intention is to put it out there and actually anyone can go on the web and say, oh, well, let's watch this at Amazon, and let's watch this film, in which case...
In which case you're saying in which case what do we need?
Well, I'm saying it's perfectly legitimate just to have it out there.
Yeah.
A Christian group is making a good resource, and it could this one tackling the subject of God, because that's the subject of the film, so that's legitimate. And that's probably why they put it on the case. They're like, well, no one else has got a good resource like this.
Yeah.
So we can add that to the case. But they probably wouldn't put it on the one of Witch Mountain, Race to Witch Mountain.
No.
Because they're like, well, you're going to see the Bible fitting into
this. Yeah. So yeah.
But it's perfectly legitimate just to make it a resource. It's probably, I don't know if you've got, if you're competing with any other people.
No, we're not. There's no one else doing this.
Well,
yeah.
That's probably why it's popular.
Yeah, yeah.
As Christians, you've got just, I don't know, just the ability to produce good resources.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, and as that gentleman was saying, leave it up to God.
Yeah, yeah.
There's loads of people wanting to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very helpful. Let me just, in the last few minutes, we just got to have some fun with Hancock. Hancock, Nietzsche, and nihilism. Hancock, Nietzsche, and Sartre. Here we go. Right.
Hancock tells the story of a superhero with a difference. He simply doesn't care. Hancock doesn't care about himself or others. He will save people when he has to, but then he doesn't care about the damage that he does in the process.
It's Walter, the grey whale. Everybody remembers him. Stuck on the beach in Montezuma. Along comes Hancock.
So he retreats into alcohol, and he only really seems to care when somebody breaks his bottle.
Give yourself up quietly.
Okay, little intro to the film. How many of you have seen it, by the way? I got a few of you have. Okay, little intro to the film. Some philosophy.
Is living out the philosophy called nihilism, which is generally associated with the 19th century German philosopher called Friedrich Nietzsche. But that's actually a little bit unfair to Nietzsche, because he advocated a rather different type of nihilism, as we'll see in a minute. We will also see that different people have offered different routes out of nihilism. One of those is illustrated in the film by the character called Ray, who first meets Hancock when he's saved by him from an oncoming train. Ray is a PR consultant who thinks that he can make Hancock's life better by changing his image. So he teaches him how to be polite, and even makes a special costume in the hope that this will take Hancock out of his sense of depressed pointlessness. In a moment, we'll think about this solution that Ray offers, but first let's think of the alternative routes out of Hancock's nihilism. Of course, you and I are unlikely to meet a depressed superhero, but we do all meet people who think that their life is pointless. What can we offer them? What are the various possibilities for bringing fulfillment and purpose in life?
Right, so that'll be a discussion point.
There are many different answers to that question. We can only look at a few here. Let's look first at what Friedrich Nietzsche might say. I think he would point out that Hancock is demonstrating just one type of nihilism, something that Nietzsche called passive nihilism. That's a sense of hopelessness and despair that derives from a weak will. Nietzsche contrasted this with active nihilism and argued that we can come through passive to active nihilism by exercising a strong will to purposefully destroy outmoded value systems. So there are those who argue that we must embrace the meaninglessness of life and actively destroy any fairy tale beliefs in meaning or purpose, such as, they would say, any belief in a God who created us for a purpose. On the other hand, some people say that we can create our own meaning and purpose by choosing to do something with our lives. This was particularly developed by the French existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. He argued that it's through choice that we make ourselves authentic human beings. This view is illustrated by Hancock as he chooses to put into practice the polite behaviour that Ray has taught him. So he's a new man with a new style.
Good job! Do I have permission to touch your body?
Yes!
It's not sexual! Not that you're not an attractive woman. You're actually a very attractive woman.
Get me out of here!
So there's two roots. Well, first of all, nihilism, and two roots out of it. One, active nihilism, embracing the meaninglessness and exercising one's will to smash all those unfounded beliefs, or existentialism of I'm choosing to behave in a particular way, and it doesn't really matter what I choose, but what I choose gives me authentic meaning. Now move on into the third bit when we look another way out of nihilism and introduce some Bible.
It's not sexual. Not that you're not an attractive woman. You're actually a very attractive woman.
Get me out of here!
To me, it seems that Hancock finds himself just as uncomfortable with this forced new man behaviour as he was with the nihilism he was seeking to escape. And for me, one of the significant messages of this film is that he only finds meaning and purpose when he discovers who he really is. Will Smith, who plays Hancock, puts it this way.
Hancock could really just get himself together, just see the vision, see who he is, see what he can represent, that there's a real possibility to change the world.
I don't know what Will Smith or the makers of this film think about the message of Jesus, but I reckon there's a strong parallel here with Jesus' teaching that you will know the truth and the truth will set you free.
So there we go. Yes.
My response to that is still, do you want to put it as the Bible's as separate from the secular philosophies, or is that one of the alternatives?
One of the alternatives, yeah. That's a good... Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. That, I think, was one of the very earliest ones we did. And it's got a different logo at the end. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I noticed that. We've gone through multiple logos and things. Yeah.
Really don't let go of this one.
Yeah. So the theme is right, the stuff, but it's the question. I watch each of these that I look at now, I balk at the end of them. Every one at the end of it, I go, oh dear. And I have to tell you, when I'm pitching to film companies about what we can do, I never show them pot that on film, or if I do, I just show them the first half. Because I'm just, it's like from a previous time, you know, and we've just got to get it wrong. We're not there, but I mean, it's helpful. I think what we've done today has been very, very helpful, you know, recognizing the importance of dealing with these issues, the importance of thinking about the philosophical questions and helping people to think about these philosophical questions, but working out how we can do it in a way that has integrity for the people, but also, I think, as we've said, very much integrity for the film, and letting the film set the agenda of that, of what we can do as a spiritual element and what we don't. So there we go. That's where we have been. This is where we want to be. And I think you've been immensely helpful in that journey with us. So thank you so much for giving up time on a wonderful sunny afternoon to be with us. God bless you. Thank you for doing it. Thank you.
And it seems to me we have 5 minutes, actually, if there are questions or comments. So use the time. Yes, please.
Just want to ask, in England, with all your connections to schools, do you ever take like sixth formers and teachers who know your work and pilot some of these things?
Yes, we haven't. That's a good question, because we do a lot of sixth form conferences, and we have 15 presenters who are out in schools doing half-day conferences. And no, we haven't. Yes, it would be interesting, wouldn't it, to actually pilot? That's a very good idea. Yeah, yeah, to actually pilot, trying to get it right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. That's helpful.
I think it would be interesting for students in France.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, because they, well, they love, I'm sure, philosophy and film and France go together, three beginning with F. Yeah.
Fine wine.
Yeah, fine wine, yeah. Oh, yes.
Is there any possibility for, you know, other languages?
Other languages. Well, the problem is because we work with the film industry and the film industry work in market sectors, we can, in Britain, we can own, we get the license to do this stuff, or they pay us to do this stuff for English language delivery in the United Kingdom. And if you go online to get these resources, these stuff that you've had, go to damaris.org/ironlady or damaris.org/marigold. You can download, and anyone can download them. But if you wanted them sent to you, you can't now because we've run out of them, but if you wanted them sent to you, we would only be allowed to send them to you if you're in the UK. Okay, so that's how it works. So anyone can use them elsewhere, but we can't translate them or have them translated until we develop the ministry further. And one of the things we want to do is to help Norway to be able to have the relationship with the film industry so that then they could to have it translated and published in Norwegian, and then in due course we hopefully will be working with the film industry in France and get it translated and published in French. But you have to go sector by sector, region by region.
The road, the road is there.
The road is there, yeah. And it's worth it, and there's no one else doing it, that's the thing, and it really is, you know, worth the battle, isn't it? And particularly when, you know, people can go into any supermarket and buy this and they've got my pod on film. And there's another one called The Way. If you see the film The Way, you go into the supermarket, buy that. It's got Carol on there, movie moment on there. Yeah.
So it's great to be there in the marketplace, you know, listening to the world after having listened to the word and building that bridge. And I think I stress this over and over again because that is really what we are called to this time. Being a disciple of Christ is actually doing this. And the tool that you have developed in Damaris, England, well, there are lots of wonderful tools for all of us to use, actually. And if you haven't been into the stand just by the bookstore in Hotel Eger, so please grab one of these DVDs here and visit the stand to find out more about the Damaris resources.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Pleasure.
Again, and thank you.
Thank you for coming.